Hello, everyone, and welcome to School Board U and the School Board's President's Webinar. Thanks for signing up and joining me. I'm Wade Pogany. I'm the former Executive Director for the Associated School Boards, and I bring over 12 years of experience working with school board presidents today. So it's really an honor to be with you and to present this webinar for you. So let's get started. You've been elected to serve your board, obviously, and there will be lots of challenges. What's great about being a school board president, though, is that there are so many rewards to this, and it's such a wonderful position, but it's a very, very important position. You play a very important role in your school district, and the president is much more than just the person that runs the meeting. You have the gavel in hand and you have that authority to run the meeting, but it's much more than that. The president really is the person who leads the board, and leadership is the key word there. You are the leader of the board. The president is the person to whom all new members look for guidance. They watch you, they ask you questions, and you're going to be the leader and the teacher for those new members. And the president is the one who the superintendent looks to for support. There is a special, unique, and important relationship between the president and the superintendent. And so you play a key role there. And the president's also the person who is the visible spokesman person for the district. You may be called on to ask to provide certain information to the district, to the community. And so you are the lead person. So it's a vital role for your board. It's a vital position, and I'm glad you're here. So what are we going to learn in this webinar? So for the next several minutes, we're going to talk a little bit about leadership and how do effective school board presidents lead. I've had such wonderful experiences watching and working with school board presidents, and I've seen really great examples of leadership. Some not so good, but really good examples of leadership and how you lead. And then I want to talk about what the best school boards do. If you're the president and you're leading this organization, what do the best school boards do? What are the characteristics that make up really good, effective school boards? And also, how do you build a strong leadership team? Your board, your superintendent, your business manager, you make up a team. And I'm hopeful that that team is strong. It's one that is respectful of each other, one that gets a lot done, one that trusts each other. And so we'll talk about how to build that team. We'll talk a little bit about what board presidents do when they plan and preside at meetings, some of the nuts and bolts about meetings. And how do you handle tough issues? We'll spend a little bit of time talking about the difficult things that might pop up. Hopefully you have a smooth year and a smooth time on the board, but there will be issues that will pop up. And then at the very end, I want to leave you with some resources that you can use along the way. So let's get started. It's always my hope that in any webinar that I do or any presentation that I do, and I get a chance now as a consultant to work for ASBSD, to work with school boards, and I travel around doing different kinds of workshops with boards. I'd love to come to your school district and be a part of that too. But I always say that if you can take away a few nuggets from any workshop, any webinar, any conventions session that you can really use, something that's practical, something that sticks with you, and you say, I can use that. This isn't a how-to webinar, how to be the school board president, but I'm going to plant some seeds in your head about things for you to think about and things that you can really, I think, take with you and use in your presidency. So your board members, they have elected you, and obviously they see some qualities in you as a leader. They wouldn't put their trust in you if they didn't. That's why they chose you to lead. So the question I want you to ask yourself is, what are those qualities? What are those characteristics of leadership that my fellow board members have entrusted me to lead this organization? Think about that for a minute. And when I've worked with board members for a long time, these are some things that come to mind. I think the best presidents that I've watched, work with, seen, talked to, I think they have a lot of these characteristics. And this list isn't encompassing of all of them, but these are some strong characteristics that I've seen. They're strong leaders, obviously. They have leadership qualities, leadership skills, but they're people that are firm in their belief. They're firm in their leadership skills. They get things done, but they're also humble. They're not necessarily people that are the biggest talker in the room, the person that's really always out there. They're humble, they lead by example, and they lead with trust. They also run really good meetings. They understand parliamentary procedure, they understand the process that they're in, they understand how agendas work and how the process of a meeting works. And that means handling open forums, that means handling the discussions. They're really good at running meetings. And by doing that, they're also good collaborators, they're good listeners. And some of the best presidents that I've seen are people that can take maybe difficult questions. You might have an issue that's brewing in your community or on your board, and they can really collaborate with the whole board to find what's the best solution that we come up with. And they listen carefully to people. They like people. They work well with others. They get along well. They're not their personalities are not some that people don't dislike. Obviously, they wouldn't like you as the president. They disliked you, but they work well with others, and they're also ethical. These are people that understand what to do. They understand right from wrong. They understand, what the most ethical thing to do. It might not be the easiest thing, but they also have a sense of integrity, and good character. And those are people I love to work with, that have good character. They're good communicators. They can speak well. They understand, how to talk to the public. They understand how to talk to fellow board members and to administrators. They show initiative and they're problem solvers. And I think this is really key and important. You'll hear this theme come up over and over as we walk into this. But these are people that don't just let problems simmer and fester sometimes. They don't let problems just sit there. They take charge. They're initiators. They want to make sure that our district is moving forward. And so we got to tackle some of these things. And they say, look, guys, we got to take care of this, whether it's a financial issue or a personnel issue, but they take charge. They're initiators. They're also very well respected in their community. People know them, they like them, they get along well with them, and they go to them, they trust them. I think that's really a key factor. And they're also knowledgeable. They know their school. They know the money, they know the personnel, they know the community, they know the environment that they work in, and they're very good at that. So these are some of the qualities that I think the best presidents I've worked with really have. And the question really for you is, ask yourself this question: what characteristics on this list do I have? And what characteristics maybe I could work on a little bit more, if there are some on there that you might look at. So however you define leadership is really up to you. We all have our different levels and different ideas. But there are qualities that each of us have. What qualities do you have? And those are qualities that you bring out. What's your definition of leadership? What do effective leaders do? We've all had people in our lives that have been good mentors, people that we've watched. Maybe they are people in our school, but maybe they're also people nationally or political leaders. Whoever you have as an ideal of a leader, you have that in your head, and you know what kinds of skills that they have. I have my definition of leadership, and it isn't the only definition, but it's what I live by, and it's one that I've cultivated over time, just watching people. I've been your lobbyist for well over 12 years, and I got to work with legislators and governors, and I've seen really effective leaders, and I've seen very poor leaders. And so I've taken some of those dimensions and asked myself, what do good leaders do? And this is just my definition of leadership. I think really effective leaders take charge. They understand issues. They understand what needs to be done. They don't shy away from it, and they tackle it. It isn't always easy, and it isn't always fun, but they take charge. They have initiative, and they get things done. They make sure that whatever it is we need to do in our school district, we're going to get this done. We're going to make sure that it happens, and they do it right. They have a sense, as I said before, of integrity. People trust them, and they're going to do the right thing. It might not always be easy, but they're going to do the right thing. And all this is surrounded by the notion that we need to make sure that leadership is focused on children. We are in the education business. We're in the business of teaching kids. And so that has to be what surrounds our definition of leadership. What is it that drives our school district forward? What is it that makes sure that we have children that are learning? And how do we make that happen? So just a couple of highlights on leadership, some things that you can see. And I take this right from the president's handbook. There is a handbook on the Associated School Board's website, and I'll give you the URL in just a little bit. that actually describes a lot of different topics, more so than I could even cover today, about the presidency and what the most effective board chairs do. So I'm going to hit a highlight a couple of these and just talk about them. And then first and foremost is that really good board presidents treat their members with respect, even when there's disagreement. And it's okay to disagree as long as we disagree civilly. And you as a board chair need to make sure that civility, that statesmanship is a part of your board, a part of your culture. And you hold each other to high standards. You hold your behavior to high standards. You make sure that your board meetings are run efficiently and effectively. Your public, your community expects that of you. They want to make sure that you have a well-run meeting, that people are getting along, that you're getting stuff accomplished. And so that requires a lot of preparation on your part. You need to know that packet. You need to know that agenda inside and out. We'll cover a little bit more of that later. But working with the superintendent to develop all that is absolutely critical. The other part is, I think that board chairs, the best board chairs I've seen, they take command. People understand who's in charge. And if there is a discrepancy in a meeting, maybe in an open forum or with a board member, people understand that you're going to be in charge. You're going to be an authority, not one that's, just trying to exert their power over people, but someone who says, no, this is how we're going to run this meeting and this is how we're going to proceed. And they understand that. There's sound wisdom. You find solutions. You find compromise when you can. You understand that the children are the top thing you keep in mind. This is our high expectation. And our high expectation is that we are focused on student achievement. We want to make sure the children are learning well. We want to make sure that we understand if we're not doing well in our testing or whatever metric we're using, that we find solutions for that. And we turn to our professionals, the educators, the superintendent, the teachers, for that purpose. And you work from a vision. This is really important. I'll highlight this a little bit more as we go, but how do you see your school in the next 2, 3 years? What is it going to look like? I hope you're not a president that just walks in and says, well, my job is just to make sure we run through the agenda and get out of here as soon as we can. That's not an effective president. The effective president has an idea, along with their superintendent, along with their board, about what's expected. What problems do we have in our district that need to be solved? What goals do we focus on, and where are we going? I'll show you that in just a moment. So, what do the best school boards do that makes them successful? And there was a study done in 2019 with the National School Board Association, and they looked at a lot of different studies about school boards. This is all research-based. And they said, what are the commonalities in these studies that would suggest that these school boards are really effective in what they do? And they came up with eight fundamental characteristics, eight different ideas of what the best school boards in the country do. So when I'm doing my trainings, I ask my school boards, I say, so how do you stack up against these? And as you're listening to this, I want you to ask yourself the same question. How do we stack up against these? Let me just run through all eight of them and you ask yourself that question. Number one and number two really go together. But number one is number one for a reason. It is the major characteristic of the top school boards in the country. And it says effective school boards commit to a vision of high expectations for student achievement and quality instruction, and they have clearly defined goals toward that vision. Think about that. Clearly defined goals toward that vision. Can you ask yourself, in my school district, do we have clearly defined goals that the whole district is working on? Everybody's involved, and we're trying to figure out what it is. Maybe it's a financial issue. Maybe it's an academic issue. Maybe it's a building issue. Maybe it's a transportation issue. And there could be several. It could be all those things. But have we clearly defined them? Do we have action steps working on toward accomplishing those goals? And that's what really good school boards do. You know that the kids are going to show up for school, the buses are going to run, the teachers are going to teach. All that's going to happen without you doing anything. And you don't have to do anything. But if you want to have an effective school, you're moving it ahead. You're moving it forward for the next generation. You're moving it forward for the kids. If you don't have clearly defined goals, think about how you would do that. There are people that can help you with that. And the second thing is they have a strong shared belief about what's possible for students and about learning. And so those two really go together. The third thing they do is that the most effective school boards in the country are accountability driven. They spend less time on operational issues and focus their time on improving student achievement. Accountability doesn't have to be a negative word. Accountability can be something that says, I'm just going to hold myself, I'm going to hold my school board, I'm going to hold my teachers accountable for whatever it is you're trying to achieve. And if you're trying to move the dial, if you're trying to move ahead, you need to do that. And so you need to ask the question in the school board meeting, what are we doing? What metrics do we use to measure that? How are the kids learning? And how do we know? And you don't have to be an expert in education to ask those questions. But good leaders hold their people and themselves accountable for where they're going. And that also goes with number four, they're data savvy. I'm going to ask you to ask your superintendent to give you stacks and stacks of data. But I am asking you to embrace what measurement tools you do have and look at it once in a while and ask yourself the question, how are the children doing and where are we at? Number five, effective boards are collaborative and they have a relationship with their staff and their community. And this is really important. They have strong communication structures to inform and engage their stakeholders. How do your people outside of the school, people in the community, people that don't necessarily have a connection to the school, how do they know what you're doing? And when you go and ask them for something, if you ask them for money or help or something in some way, do you have a good relationship? And they say, sure, we'll chip in, we'll help you out. And you have to have those communication structures in place. Do you have social media communication? Do you have a newspaper? Do you have other kinds of documents that go out to the public and they can see? And are your boards open to having people come into your boardroom? Number six, you align your resources with your goals so that you make sure that you're moving ahead with the finances that you have. Number seven, you lead as a team. You work together with your superintendent, and there's really this strong collaboration and the strong trust that you have between the board members, the superintendent, the staff, and you're working as a team. It doesn't mean you can't disagree. We're all going to disagree, and that's okay. As long as you do it civilly with a statesmanship idea that you want to get stuff accomplished and not just fight with each other. And number eight, last, I think is important. You take part in team development. You have trainings. You attend the joint convention. You work with associated school boards on the things that you need training for. So those are the eight characteristics that the National School Board Association found to be common among all the research that they were doing. And so the real question is, where do we fit in? Where do I fit in all this? Do we have a strong team? Do we work with each other? Do we have goals in place? Are we holding ourselves accountable? Do we have communication structures for our community? Are all those pieces in place? And if not, it's okay. Pick one. Pick one as a leader and say, I think we need to work on this, and talk to your board about doing that. And Associated School Boards has resources along this line to help you. I'm going to add one more, just as you know, decades of working with school boards and working with schools as I've done. And I've seen this happen in schools, and I want to plant a seed in your head. I think that we need to celebrate success with our kids. I've seen examples of where school boards will bring in student activities, student representatives, and they will talk about whatever it is that they want to talk about. It might be the kids from FCLA or the art club or the football team. You don't have to win a championship to bring kids into this to your boardroom. But what the public sees is that they see the board as a connection between children and leadership, children and the school board, children and the things that you're doing on the policy level at the highest level. And so people really respect that if you have someone to celebrate success. I know lots of school districts that have this on their agenda and they bring in for 5 minutes, just bring in a group of kids, or it might be a student of the month week and or month. And you might say, well, bring the elementary kids in and we just want to take pictures of them with the board chair. Making those connections with kids is, I think, is really important. And ask the question, are you invested in students or are you invested in something else? And that's what we really want to find out. All right, how do you build a strong board team? We're talking about your school board, we're talking about your administrators, and what are some things that you can do to build that team? Well, one thing is that strong teams are strong because they're engaged in meaningful work. If boards see their work as not being meaningful, if it doesn't mean anything to them, if they're not getting anything done, they're bored, and they're going to find things to not do very productively. And so you want to engage in meaningful work. Do you have strategic plans? Do you have school improvement plans? Do you have board goals and superintendent goals? And you want to make sure that your policies are driving the work of the board. Are they living documents? Are they things that you actually do? Or are they just words on paper that you put on a shelf? So think about that. That goes along with the effective school boards research. Do you have meaningful goals and are you working on them? They also emphasize student achievement. They ask the question, how are the kids doing? Many schools have instructional teams, people that review student progress. They look at how kids are doing. And sometimes then they will share that with the school board. And they want to make sure that we're on the right track. We want to make sure that we're working on our weaknesses and highlighting our strengths. Some boards have that as a standing agenda item to get a progress report about not only the goals that they're working on, but also student achievement and where they are. And quite often, there are discussions within budgets to talk about, well, what materials do we need? What resources do we need to make sure instruction is done at the highest level that we possibly can? I think board teams also are effective when there's really healthy discussion. I put that on the headline there. Healthy discussions make good decisions. Now, think about this. A lot of what you do as a board and as a board chair is that you walk yourself through these decisions. They might be as simple as just paying the bills, but they might be as difficult as closing a school or deciding to move toward an opt-out or something that's really hard, some hard decisions. And so what I always recommend is that the most effective board teams, the strongest board teams, are those that hash it out. They spend time talking with each other at the board meeting about what are the solutions to these problems. And you have an opportunity to facilitate that. Your job is to facilitate that whole discussion. How do you make sure that Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Jones and Mr. Anderson all have a say in that process? Don't leave anybody out because there might be someone who has a better idea than you do or someone else does. Invite them to share and invite them to collaborate. Not everybody has to agree. It's okay. You might have a different idea than your board mate that has a different view, but that's okay. Accept that view and just say, I'm going to disagree with that view. But try to find the best decision that you possibly can. So here's what you do. Have healthy debate. Encourage healthy debate. Encourage ideas and solutions that might not fit the mold, that might not be all that what you think is in your head the way to go. But your job is to listen, and your job is to find ways and find solutions to problems. Look at all sides of an issue. Look at the depth of a decision that you might have to make. If you're going for an opt-out, and you might want to bring an expert in or someone that you have that you trust that could help you with that opt-out, but listen to all sides of that issue. What is the public going to expect of you? What are the information you're going to provide for that? Have that conversation and keep an open mind to be influenced. You might find that there might be somebody else that has a better idea, a better solution than what you have. But at least your mind should be open to entertaining that. You don't have to accept it, but entertain that idea. And the best presidents I've ever seen are those that can facilitate those multiple views and try to cultivate those into one consensus. And that's really hard to do. That is a skill that few people have. But I've seen it in the legislature. I've seen it on school boards. If they can say, okay, we'll take bits and pieces of this or this and then come to a consensus of something that you didn't even think you had, but you find a solution for it. You really have to make sure that your board has that good discussion. So open that up for them. The other part of building a strong board team is the president and the superintendent's relationship. What you'll find, if you haven't already, is that you're going to spend a lot more time with the superintendent than you did as a board member, because that's what you do. You help the superintendent with information, you help them problem solve, you help them make good decisions. You ask for facts, information, but you really help your superintendent to work with the board. That's you're the liaison between the superintendent. You're the bridge that really connects the board and the superintendent together, and the business manager to a great degree too, or your admin staff. But the best relationship people I've ever seen with presidents, they build trust. They communicate all the time, and they problem solve together. Those are the three key factors between a board president and a superintendent. And so I hope that you spend time with your superintendent. I hope you get to know them well, know their weaknesses, know their strengths, know their likes and their dislikes, because you're going to have to do some problem solving even outside of the boardroom with them. And they're going to need your support. They really do. They're going to ask you to help them out when you possibly can. Urge your superintendent to bring concerns from the public, to the board, to him or her. And if you hear something in the public, encourage your board members to say that's something we need to have the superintendent look at and take care of. Ask your board members to make sure that they're handling complaints the right way. All of you have more than likely a policy on chain of command. So when you hear complaints in the community, you need to make sure that those complaints are funneled to the superintendent so that they can take care of those. Don't get involved in those issues unless it's something that the superintendent should bring to the board then, but make sure that you deal with those problems in the right manner. And deal with your issues with a superintendent. There should be no gotchas. There should be no surprises with your superintendent. That'll really destroy your relationship with your superintendent if you're thinking we're gonna surprise them all the time with different kinds of things. That doesn't work. That's middle school drama behavior. Make sure that they are informed, and make sure they need to make sure that you're informed with what's going on. All right, let's talk a little bit about planning and presiding at the meeting. What are some things that you need to know about the meetings? And these are pretty intuitive, usually, but not always. And one of the things is the agenda. We all have a template of an agenda. I'll show you an example of one in a second here. But your role is really to meet with your superintendent and to walk through your agenda with him or her prior to the meeting. You need to know everything about that agenda going into it. Why is that important? Well, you don't want any surprises to happen to your superintendent, but you don't want any surprises to happen to you too. And so if you know what some of the motions are going to be, some of the decisions are going to be, if you know some of the landmines that might pop up, you can anticipate that. You can think about that prior to the meeting. So you need to, I always encourage you to meet with your superintendent prior to that, offer input in the agenda, maybe you write the agenda together, but more than likely the superintendent, the business manager will put the agenda together with the packet and stuff. But you have to know, along with your superintendent, what's in that. Otherwise, you're going to get blindsided and something's going to pop up and you won't know how to react to it. You always need to be prepared before that meeting. Agendas, they help the board. They help the board and the community understand what's going to be discussed. It's a process that you focus on. You estimate how much time you're going to need. But know what actions are going to take place at that meeting. This shouldn't be a surprise to you. You should know what kinds of motions are going to be happening. You should know what to ask for in motions. So if there needs to be a decision made, your superintendent will work with you to guide you through that and help you with those anticipated motions. Prioritize your items. Routine items should be placed on a consent agenda. If you're paying the bills, if you're doing the routine things, use a consent agenda. But you want to make sure that you understand where we are. The law says very clearly that you have to post your full agenda 24 hours prior to the meeting. It's not legal to post it after that. And so make sure that your agenda is prepared, ready to go, and posted. Because once it's posted, it's pretty much locked in at that point. Here's an example of a basic template. I've added a couple of things in there. You call the order, you have your pledge, you have your roll call, you have your In many cases, you approve the agenda at this point. Maybe have your open forum where the public can express their views. We'll talk about in a second. Academic progress updates, I recommend you put here. Usually those are in the form of a superintendent's report or a principal's report in some way. You have good news items if you want to bring the students in and have them talk for just 5 minutes. Use a consent agenda, new business, old business, committee reports, executive session if necessary. And so that's a pretty standard agenda, but there's a lot that goes into that when you meet once a month. Some of you might meet more often. So let's talk about in the meeting, you have this piece that's called open forum. And the public is allowed to speak by law to the board. They can address the board. And it's your responsibility to run open forum as the board chair. You want to conduct this in a very civil way. You want to make sure that everybody has a chance to speak on things they can speak on. And I'll say this from the outset, open forum in the First Amendment doesn't mean that you can say anything that you want to say. So I have some recommendations, and you probably should have, and probably do have, a script that you would read at the beginning of the meeting. You say, "Is now is a time and a place for open forum. The public can offer their views on subjects." But you should never, in the script, you should tell them, "You can't talk about students, you can't talk about school personnel, and you can't talk about families." And if anybody goes into that vein, you need to use your gavel and say, "Wait a minute, stop, stop. We don't allow those things to be discussed." And that's important, really important. You shouldn't be talking about kids in an open meeting if there's some issue that we're dealing with there, or their families, or school personnel. There's a time and a place for that, but open forum is not the time and the place. They shouldn't be rude or offensive. Stop that right away. You should have a set time limit for each speaker and/or a group of speakers. And be sure the rules of open forum are printed somewhere so that someone can't say, "Oh, I didn't know what the rules were." Maybe you have that printed on an agenda form that they come in and they sign up, they want to speak, and you give them a document. But don't respond to speakers and tell your board this too. You're not prepared for what topics they might bring up. It could be anything. Refer them to the superintendent if they need to, but you're really not ready to respond to speakers. So just listen, thank them for their input. It might be things that you don't always like to hear, but it's good input for the board. But open forum is really your baby. This is something you need to focus on and you need to work on as the president. Let's talk about open meeting laws just for a little bit. This also affects you directly. South Carolina Law 125.1 is the first open meeting law that you should know about. And you've probably been through the Attorney General's brochure that talks about open meeting laws already, because that's a new law that says every school board member needs to read those laws about open meetings. But this is important. All school board business must be done in public. There's a few exceptions. We call that executive session, but we'll get to that in a second here. But make sure that you are policing your board so that people aren't, especially a quorum of your board, they're not having conversations about, buying the bus or about whatever decision your board's going to be making. That is a gross violation of open meetings laws. And so you have to do those discussions and those decisions in public. And that means at your board meeting. You can't do it over email. You can't do it over social media. You can't do it, over a beer or two or at the ball game. You can't discuss those things. If you want to go to the ball game and there's, a quorum of you sitting together, or even less than a quorum sitting together, that's fine if you're cheering on your kids and you're rooting for your team. But the minute that you begin to have a conversation about that bus or buying a bus or making some decision, now you're in violation of open meeting laws. So know the laws, read those laws, and understand what they are, because they'll come back to you as the board chair. If you fail to comply with open meeting laws, there are consequences from the Open Meetings Commission. And the Open Meetings Commission will decide what those consequences are. And sometimes those consequences are, I've seen in recent year or so, that they'll just publish them in the newspaper, or in Keloland, or someplace that is very public. And you don't want to have your school board on the news that you've been having secret conversations behind closed doors, or you've had conversations outside of the board meeting. And failure to comply with this really falls on the school board president. It's your job to police your board and make sure those open meeting laws are being followed. All right, let's switch gears and talk about executive session. This is probably another really important part of your job and what you're doing. And executive session is 125.2, and it describes situations where you, as a board, can go into executive session away from the public and have discussions. And these discussions usually are not fun. They're usually discussions about personnel, discussions about students, about contracts, whatever it might be. But sometimes they can be white knuckle situations that need to be held in private. For example, I'll give you these six reasons why you can go into executive session. Number one, discuss the qualifications, competence, performance, character, or fitness of any public officer or employee, or prospective public officer or employee. So it's really the personnel question. You're having difficulty with a staff member, the superintendent comes in and has a recommendation, you need to talk about that. That is not appropriate to have that conversation about a staff member in the public forum, the public setting, in a school board meeting. So you want to make sure that that's done behind or within an executive session. Discuss a student discipline, a suspension, expulsion. Those are all things that must be done in executive session. Number three, consulting with legal counsel or reviewing communications with legal counsel about proposed or pending litigation or contracts. You can't always just invite your legal attorney into the executive session for anything. They have to be things that are either proposed or pending litigation discussions, and those things should be held in executive session. You're preparing for negotiations, the contract negotiations with the teachers union. That can be done in executive session. Discussing marketing or pricing strategies in executive session. And number six, discuss school safety measures should be done in executive session. So how do you do it? Well, the best process is to enter into executive session in a very specific way. So the first thing you do is you entertain a motion to go into executive session. You have a motion and a second, and in that motion, it should state which of those six elements or more that you're going into executive session for. So, example, if you're going into executive session under sub one, which is personnel, you would have the motion say that we move into executive session under South Dakota Codified Law 125.2 sub one, or for personnel reasons. You don't list what the reason is. You just say what the topic of the discussion is going to be about. Now, if you do want to have a conversation of more than one subject, you can say sub one and sub whatever. You can have more than one topic in that same motion. But here's what's critical, presidents. Make sure that you only discuss in executive session what you made a motion for. Never say, once you've done those discussions, if you have a personnel or student issue, never say, is there anything else you want to talk about? Then you violate open meetings laws because that wasn't part of the original motion, and that's very specific. And so you go into discussion, you move into a private area, or you dismiss the public from the boardroom, and then you have your discussion. And by law, only the board can decide who is in that meeting. You can invite anybody in there that you want to. I always recommend that you have your superintendent and/or your business manager in that room with you to have that discussion, but you get to decide who should be invited in. And it's pretty rare anybody else is in that room with you, but you may want to hear testimony from somebody if that's the case. So you go into executive session, you have this discussion about the motion that you made, and no other topics are brought up. You can't do that. Only the topics which the motion is made can be discussed. Minutes are not taken. There are no notes taken in executive session. There are no votes taken in executive session. There are no motions. There's no voting. If any action needs to happen, then you come out of executive session, and it's simple. The chairman just says, "Okay, we're not hearing any more discussion about this. I'm closing executive session. We're coming out of executive session," and then you go back into the boardroom and/or invite the public in and say, "Okay, we're back in session now with the board meeting, and you can take official action if you need to, or just you're done." And usually, it's at the end of the meeting, and you adjourn. So, a motion to go in. The motion must include the reason you're going into executive session or reasons in executive session. You go in, you have this discussion about whatever the topic is behind closed doors, and make sure that it's public and or not public. And then you have your discussion. You come out of executive session, and if you have to take action, you can do that. Now, here's the most important part about executive session: it must remain confidential. Folks, you have talked about students, you've talked about people. Maybe you've talked about people's livelihood or even their ability to stay in school. Those things should be confidential and should not be talked about anywhere beyond that boardroom. And that's really important. And the reason that's so important is that if you do talk about it, and I've seen cases where this has happened, where someone has even accidentally mentioned something outside of the boardroom or outside of executive session, you just destroy the trust of the board. If someone's talking about things that were confidential in the executive session room and they talk about it outside, well, the next time you're in executive session, no one's going to say a word, because they don't trust you. They know that you might or someone else might say something outside of the boardroom, and then you can't get anything done. And these are really, really heady topics, really important topics, really difficult topics. So make sure that you, as the president, encourage your board always, multiple times, to hold that confidential in what you say. All right, a little bit about parliamentary procedure. Most of you have some kind of a policy that follows Robert's rules, which is what you need. You state your motion. The president starts with we say it's the motion. There's discussion. Go to a vote, and let me walk you through a couple of scenarios. Pretty simple. So here's scenario number one. The president says, "I would entertain a motion to adopt," or whatever the motion is. But in this case, we're going to adopt policy ABC. So use that word. I would entertain a motion. You're asking your board for a motion to bring something up. Board member one says, "I move that we adopt policy ABC." The president says, "Is there a second?" Second board member says, "There's a second." And all that says is that now we have the motion on the table for discussion. Is there discussion? Then the board will debate and talk about the merits of the proposal. And then usually you get to a point where everybody's done talking and you say, "Hearing no further discussion, it will now vote on the motion to adopt policy ABC. All in favor say aye, opposed say nay." The secretary calls a roll. Motion passes 5-0. There may be, it's pretty unlikely, but there may be some times that there is a procedure when you have an amendment. So here's scenario number two. I would entertain a motion to adopt policy ABC. The first board member says, "I move that we adopt policy ABC." President says, "Is there a second?" Board member two says, "Second." Is there discussion? Board member three says, "Mr. President, I move that we amend the policy to strike line four that begins with after the first incident." So they're making an amendment now, a change to the policy. And that can happen. And so someone's making a change. The president, so this is a new motion now on top of the main motion, which was the motion to adopt. So this is a secondary motion. Now you have this amendment. President, is there a second? Board member number four says, "I second it." Is there discussion on the motion to amend? And you need to keep that discussion on the amendment only, not on the whole, not the big motion, the motion to adopt the policy, but on the motion to amend is what you're focused on. So now you just have that conversation. Once that conversation is done, you say, "Hearing no further discussion, we'll vote on the amendment." You have two motions on the floor right now. Okay, one is the big motion, which is the main motion, and now you have this little amendment motion over here. You say, "We'll vote on the motion to amend." The motion to amend reads, And then you restate the motion so it's clear everybody knows what the amendment is. Ayes, nays, motion carries 3-2. Okay, now we'll return to the main motion, which is to adopt policy ABC. So you just go backwards now. You go from the amendment backward to the main motion, and then you debate the merits of the main motion. Hearing no further discussion, we'll vote on the motion to adopt policy ABC as amended. That's a key phrase there, as amended. All in favor, aye, nay, and then the vote is 5-0. So you may have an amendment issue that comes up, and that would be a parliamentary procedure. I get this question sometimes about, well, do we have to have a motion to start a discussion? Can we just on the agenda have a discussion about a topic and not really have any decision on it? Sure, you can. You can put that on the agenda. Just say, we're just going to have a discussion about whether or not we're going to have a preschool, and we're just going to have this open discussion with the board. You can do that. Or sometimes the question comes up, well, Wade, do I have to have a motion to begin a discussion if we're going to make a decision on it? Or can I just put the topic on the table, let people decide, and then at the end of the discussion, make the motion? My opinion is you can do either one. There are advantages to and disadvantages to both of them. Some of my boards will say, okay, we're just going to put the issue of X on the table, talk about it for a while, and then the board chair says, is there anybody that would make the motion to, do whatever you've talked about doing? And so they do at the end because you have all the discussion in the beginning. Or you make the motion in the beginning, you're going to approve policy ABC, discussion, and then vote. Either way is fine. And it's a matter of preference on what you do. Okay. I said before, I think your job really is to instill public confidence in your board meetings. They need to know you run a tight ship. They need to know you get things done. They need to know, and they're watching. They're watching how you run this. So make sure you take this seriously. Make sure you prepare for it. Make sure you plan. So the last area before we get to resources is how to handle the tough stuff, and things will come up. Sometimes we just have to do hard things, and that's why we're here. That's why we are elected. And I love this quote from Ronald Reagan. It said, "Peace is not the absence of conflict; it's the ability to handle conflict by peaceful means." Things are not always going to be peaceful, and especially when there's conflict. But Reagan said, "The ability to handle conflict by peaceful means." That's you, board presidents. That's you when you're in a leadership role to make sure things happen. So you want to make sure that whatever the conflict is, whatever the topic you're discussing is, make sure it's resolved in a peaceful means, with civility, with statesmanship. People are heard, and people have a right to be heard. And people then will have to live with whatever decision is made by your board, good or bad. But that's what we do as school boards. And sometimes you need to be the dad. There are situations when you have to police your board. So stand up, take responsibility, watch for open meeting issues, watch for emails going back and forth, talking outside of executive session, board members to act as the board, and they're only one member, but they act as the board. They don't follow chain of command. They take on personnel issues. Sometimes, respectfully, you need to have a conversation with that colleague, with that board member. Be firm, but be, one who's trying to say, hey, this isn't how we operate. This isn't, you're violating the law, or this isn't our culture, or this isn't how we do that. Those are hard. Those are really hard because you sit there and think, oh, I don't want to talk to this person. But you got to get them in line. You got to make sure that they are following the rules of the game. And some people don't want to do that. And that's their personality. But you have to, try to help them understand you're working with as a team. You're trying to do what's best and what's best for your school district. So I'm going to walk through a couple of things. Simply, this isn't a this is how I solve all these conflicts. That's not my intent here. But just to put some ideas in your head to think about these things before they happen. So here's the first one. What if you were called upon to give a statement to the press, newspaper, television, whatever it might be, and this is going to happen. You are the board chair. They're going to come to you as a spokesperson. Prepare yourself and make sure that you have what I call, the 30-second response. Two or three points you want to make. Stick to those points. Don't elaborate, in great detail if you don't have to or if don't want to. But you need to think about what you're going to say, especially if it's a controversial issue within your community. That's something you need to prepare for and think ahead about. Second one are personnel issues. First and foremost, stay out of personnel issues until they come to the board. The board's job is to hire and support the superintendent, but you only have a personnel of one. The board's in charge of one primary employee, and that's the superintendent. The superintendent is in charge of the teachers and the cooks and the bus drivers and everybody else. So let them do that. And if there are issues that pop up, talk to the superintendent about that, but make sure that those personnel matters are dealt with by the administration. And only dealt with in your case when they come to the board. Remind the board that there's some basic rules. If there are things that that come up and you have to be judge and jury about in a hearing, for example, they have to remain impartial. And if the board is prejudiced against an employee because they, looked into something that this teacher or this person was doing, they can't be impartial. And so that's going to be really tough in a hearing when they have some clear biases about something. So remember, coach your board that you need to be as objective as you possibly can in a hearing. And so that means you let the superintendent deal with those personnel issues, and those discussions are had at that level. A couple of strategies for handling conflict. Ask the question, what is the problem? What's causing this conflict, and where are we at? Is there some common ground that we can find? Really good conflict management people, like school board presidents, can find common ground and find solutions to the conflict. They don't just let them fester. They don't just let them keep going. They try to diffuse the conflict, diffuse the emotion. They express their thoughts with I statements, not you statements, and they focus on the issue, not the person. And that's in a heated exchange, that's difficult to do sometimes. So here's a couple of examples. What if you have a community conflict, a community controversy? I think about some of my friends that have dealt with school closings. They're in rural areas, they have school closings, and people are mad, right? So people come into your board, they want to speak, they want to have time open for them, and there are other topics. Or maybe there's a curriculum issue, sex education, religious issue, books and banning books. These are all really highly charged, highly emotional issues. And might even be, some public outrage. What do you do in that case? Well, think through that. What would you have done? And I think what I found when you have the public that's mad about something is the best thing to diffuse it is to hear them out. Let them have their time as long as they're not, cursing and yelling and screaming too much. But they're mad. They need to express their emotions about what decision is coming up. So you need to give them time. They need to be heard. Even if you disagree with their position, they need to be heard. And I think that goes a long way with your leadership and how you work on that. But that's, I think, one of the best ways to manage conflict. And then make sure that your decisions are transparent. We haven't decided this in the back room. It's been something that's going to be discussed openly and publicly in the room. And sometimes they're white knuckle decisions. So you got to make sure that you let the public have that time. Another conflict might be between superintendents. You and the superintendent or the board and superintendent. Make sure you're evaluating your superintendent fairly, consistently. And your job is to navigate the disagreements between the superintendent and the board. Your ultimate goal is to maintain that trust between the board and the superintendent. But there might be some times when you're in disagreement with the board and the superintendent. Okay, that's all right. But make sure that you understand what the disagreement is, why we have this disagreement, and then try to make sure it's done professionally and respectfully. That's hard sometimes. It really is. But you also, I think, in working with superintendents, you also need to be fair to them. And make sure that they understand your expectations, because They're going through their day, they're putting out fires, they're making sure that things happen, and you're mad at them, but they don't know why all the time because you haven't set a clear expectation or the board hasn't set a clear expectation. And that's okay. Make sure that you have a conversation, either an executive session or use the board chair. Take that upon yourself and say, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Superintendent, we need to talk about this. This is where the board is. How can we manage this? And sometimes those aren't fun conversations, but you're the dad. You need to make sure this happens. And so handle that as best you possibly can. Funding and budget cuts are always going to be, white knuckle situations, because you don't have enough money. You're trying to address all the issues within the funding. And school funding is complicated. It's very complicated. So we're trying to, justify a bond or a tax increase or an opt-out, all those things. Make sure you, as a president, find as many people as you possibly can to give you input, give you information about those budget issues. It's not just your superintendent. It might be your business manager, but make sure that you're inclusive of all those folks. And sometimes the conflict is internal. That's not uncommon. Dealing with board members and conflicts and power struggles, sometimes it's your job to say, hey, let's go have coffee. Let's figure out what it is that we can do together so that we can make sure our board is running efficiently. Or you're just trying to police them and say, look, we can't violate open meeting laws, or we're not here to micromanage the superintendent. And you want to make sure that you have that conversation. And usually most board chairs that I know never had that conversation. But sometimes there is conflict internally, and you work with your superintendent to resolve that. And it's simply a matter of communication and how you're establishing, the kinds of expectations you want to see. The last thing is, there are some really good resources for you as board chairs to look at. I take you to the ASBSD website. It's just asbsd.org, and there's a ton of resources there for board members and also for board chairs. If you go to the ASBSD website and you look at the very top banner, Tyler Pickner, our communication director, he has a banner up on top. His documents is one of them. Click on documents, and if you scroll down, you're going to find something called the ASBSD President's Handbook. It's under the Documents tab, and this is the URL for that if you want to write that down. But you can find it easily just by going to asbsd.org. And look at that. It's really a good document. Tyler and I edited this just very, very recently, and so it's got a bunch of tips in there, much, much more detailed than I can cover today. And I think it'd be very helpful for you to get some information. The other thing you can do is call ASBSD. Heath Larson is the executive director there. He'll get you answers to your questions. And one thing I know about the association is that if they don't have the answer between their staff, they'll find someone who does. And so you can contact Heath and get some answers from him. And they're a good resource for you. You can call me if you want to. I get calls from board members all the time. In my after my trainings, there are some issues that pop up. You can call me at 605-222-0889. Usually, a text works best, and then I can get back to you and see what issue you need. But I would be glad to help you if I could advise you on some kind of issue or on some kind of protocol that you're working on. My final thoughts are this. At the end of your term, you're going to go through this year or maybe multiple years. Maybe you're a veteran president that's listening to this right now, and you've been here for a long time. But at the end of your term, how will people remember you as their leader? What will it be that defines you as their leader? Have you influenced others? Have you put trust in others to trust you? And the question I always ask is, what will your legacy be? Will you be the collaborator that worked, with your board members? Will you be the visionary that set a direction for your school district? Will you be the one that people will say, yep, he or she, they got things done. They were motivated. They were working on stuff. Will you show respect to your colleagues? Will you build trust with them? Will you listen? Will you be a problem solver? And in the end, will you be the board chair whose people will say they really cared about kids? They really had a compassion for kids. They wanted to make sure we had a good school in our community. Will you be thought of as that? So the question is, take time to think about what kind of leader do you want to be, and then be that leader. What is it about this list that I'm good at, and what might I not be very good at, and I can work on a little bit more. It's a great role, being the school board president. It's an important role. It's a key role. It all comes with experience. You're going to make mistakes at the beginning if you're a brand new person. That's okay. Learn from those mistakes and move on. But I just think if you can respect your board members, trust your board members, trust your superintendent, business manager. If you can get to that point, you'll do very, very well because I think those are key characteristics. I think leadership is about taking initiative, getting something's done, and do it ethically, do it with character, do it with integrity. So I really want to say thanks to Tyler for producing this webinar for us. Tyler does a great job at Associated School Boards. You see his communications come out all the time. Thanks, Tyler, for all your hard work. And I just want to wish all of you the best of luck in this position. I want to wish you the best for a great school year. Keep the children in mind. Keep your staff in mind. Keep your board members in mind. You'll do well. Thanks, everybody. Take care.